In the 1920s, Cole Porter, giant of the American songbook, was writing musical hits with songs like Let's Do It, Let's Fall in Love, and Love for Sale. But not every show he wrote was produced, at least in this country. And now, 9 decades later, a lost review of Porter's has been found and will be staged for the first time in the United States this coming Friday at Town Hall. Bringing the Ambassador Review to life are Grammy Award winner Vince Giordano and his band, the Nighthawks, also two-time Tony nominee Tom Wopat, and they join us now along with musical theater historian Ken Bloom, who unearthed the lost score and directs this production. Welcome all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ken, when did Cole Porter write this?
He wrote it in 1928. And
was he already famous?
He was completely not famous. His previous show was 4 years earlier in the United States. It was a flop, and he decamped to Paris to get away from the United States, and really Paris made him bloom. And, you know, the Cole Porter we know now actually began in Paris.
These songs are in the classic Cole Porter mold, although there was no classic Cole Porter mold because he changed a lot over his career.
Right. These songs give you an inkling of what was to come. Like you said, Let's Do It, which is that sexy double entendre. We have a song called Pilot Me, which is like a version of that, that he's going toward that. So you see Cole Porter in capital letters coming down the pike with his next show.
Why did it disappear?
Well, it was a nightclub show, so they weren't going to import it into the United States. We didn't really have nightclub shows then. We had, you know, big bands. And it was in Paris, and, you know, it was over. That was it.
Vince and Tom, let's begin with you, Vince.
Okay.
What did you think when you first heard the news that a lost Cole Porter score had resurfaced?
Well, I spoke to lots of folks about this show over the years, and, of course, I knew Ken's involvement with him putting this show together in Paris. The original orchestrations could not be found, so he hired a wonderful arranger, Larry Blank, who did an amazing job. And Ken said, you know, a pipe dream. We'd love to play this here in New York, and we'd love to get the original 1920s-sounding arrangements. So he gave me the job to reorchestrate this, and I said, wow, this is a great idea, but it's a lot of work, and I'm a little paranoid because, this is special music. So I called the Fred Waring Archive one more time. And
this is at Penn State?
Yes. And Ken had called there years ago and must have got the wrong person on the phone because they said no.
Somebody on coffee break.
Exactly. There's no, you know, none of this is here. So I sent my little request in, and they wrote me back. They said, yeah, all the tunes that you requested are here, plus three more that are not even on the list. So I fell off my chair, and I called Ken Bloom, and he fell off his chair. And so we started to put this together. And with my band, the Nighthawks, we were playing this wonderful set of orchestrations.
How do they hold up?
They're great. They're wonderful.
But go ahead, Tom.
They're also kind of period. I mean, there's a song that I'm singing that starts with the bulk of the song, then it has the verse at the end, and then there's 8 bars of music, mm-hmm. of orchestra, mm-hmm. which is pretty idiosyncratic, but also indicative of the times, I think.
Yeah, if Vince had done orchestrations, you know, we think of the cliche 20s orchestrations with Vo, Do, Di, Do, and all that stuff, but these orchestrations are the real deal.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly what was heard. Are you suggesting Vince would have done a Vo, Do, Di,
No, but it's, we can only draw upon what we know of the 20s and what we've heard.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at a score from the 20s, do you still learn things?
Oh, absolutely. Very experimental things that the arranger in the Waring band was doing. He was drawing from, believe it or not, some of Bix Beiderbecke, because some of the guys had worked with Bix Beiderbecke in earlier. So there's a little quote of like Singing the Blues, which is a wonderful song that Bix and Frankie Trumbauer played. And, of course, very unorthodox whole tone passages. And on Pilot Me, the trombones are instructed to make like airplane sounds, mm-hmm. you know, because, and I, you know, you tell a trombone to the player to go a little crazy. So we have to hold them down a little bit, you know.
Ken, how did you find that the score of the review was in Milan, in an archive of all places?
A friend of mine is Christophe Mirambeau, who is a director and producer and musical theater historian in Paris. And he went to all the archives and searched it down. And it turns out that some of the publisher's archives were consolidated in Milan, and that's where some of the music was.
Tom, you have sung music from pretty much all of the great composers of the great American songbook. What do you think makes Cole Porter's work distinctive?
Well, I mean, of course, there's the double entendre that he uses a lot. There's also the lyric, and the structure of the lyric is unique, I think. I think he does internal rhyme as well as anybody. And it's an interesting, as far as emotional input into songs, he's very sly about it. A lot of times the song is not overtly emotional, but there's definitely a subcurrent of that.
He's one of the composers who wrote both the lyrics and the music.
Yeah.
Irving Berlin being another one. Do you see something different in the works of composers like that as opposed to the teams like the Gershwins? Pretty great. Or Rodgers and Hart, et cetera.
I mean, you look at especially Irving Berlin. Well, and I'm sure Cole Porter, too. It's like some of the stuff came as a complete unit, it looks like. Mm-hmm. You know, there's stories about Irving Berlin, like the Rodgers and Hammerstein telling him they needed an 11th hour number for Annie Get Your Gun, and he wrote, you know, Old Fashioned Wedding in 20 minutes or something. So, or Anything You Can Do, that's the one. So that kind of thing.
He wrote Anything You Can Do in 20 minutes?
Well, like a half an hour. He said, I'll get back to you. And he like phoned them when he got home with the...
I would have said, no, you can't.
They were very prolific. And Noel Coward was another big giant in that way that wrote all the music
Lesser.
And lyrics.
Frank Lesser.
Frank
too.
Lesser, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, looks Harold like Arlen later.
Yeah. Yes, that's right.
So go ahead.
I'm sorry.
But do you see, as a musician, do you see some special thing that occurs when the person writes both the lyrics and the music? Do they scan differently?
No, not to me. I just appreciate the amazing contributions that these wonderful songwriters gave to us. And the thing I love about Cole Porter, I don't feel that he ever repeats himself. Every time he does a song, it seems to go in another direction. You can say, oh, there he goes again. No, he doesn't. He's off on another tangent, and I think that's pretty incredible.
But that's one of the things that's cool about this, though, is that you see some of the germs of what he later does.
Right.
You see some of the ideas that show up later on and in a more sophisticated fashion later on in his career.
My guests are Tom Wopat, Vince Giordano, and Ken Bloom. We're talking about a lost Cole Porter musical that will be produced for the first time in New York or in the United States.
It's produced for the first time anywhere outside of Paris.
Uh-huh.
So that's a big world.
And it'll be the Town Hall this Friday. Now, he did it in Paris. It was called originally La Revue des Ambassadeurs.
Yeah, the Ambassador was the nightclub. So it was the review of the Ambassador nightclub.
And it's been revived in Paris, hasn't it?
Well, we did this one concert in Paris in 2012, but we didn't have all the songs. And like Vin said, we found more songs. And now it's complete, including a melody that he wrote for the show that he never put a lyric to. And we're throwing that in, too, because it's really a great little tune.
It is, called Rippling Streams. And no, there's no notice of this at the Library of Congress or the Cole Porter Estate was just so ecstatic that we found a new, Cole Porter song.
Ken, the New York Times describes this as a frothy nightclub concoction.
It's a really...
And you did it in a Paris nightclub, but this is going to be Town Hall. What's the difference in the way it comes across when you do it in a theatrical setting?
Well, in Paris, we did it in a theater that was really a theater, and it was strictly a concert. So,
I mean, you could do this at Studio 54, but Cabaret is there right now.
Yeah, I know. We wanted to do it in a place with tables, but we also have four dancers, and Randy Skinner, who's a three-time Tony Award nominee, he's choreographing, and we have four dancers also. So it's more of a show than what we did in Paris.
Tom, are there spoken transitions between the songs?
No, there is no
just a
connective
bunch of songs.
It's a bunch of songs. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the connection would be. Do you guys have the running order from the original show?
Yeah, we're doing exactly the running order of the original.
Excellent.
We're not changing anything. Yeah. A lot of the songs deal with Paris, In ways that...
Well, he did write I Love Paris.
He did. Well, after this, the name of his next show was Paris. And then he wrote 50 Million Frenchmen, and Silk Stockings was in Paris, and Anything Goes was in Paris. Paris liberated him. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a song that the Statue of Liberty sings in our show when people leave New York and she's like, take me with you. This place, now we
One
have Prohibition.
Yeah.
Right. There's no fun in this place anymore. And really, there's a song called Military Maids. Military maids were women who were suffragettes who wanted equality with men, and they would dress like men. But at the same time, they were hungry for men. So this is a song about these uptight women who want equality, but they want their man. So it's funny stuff.
Yeah, it was performed in English in Paris. Who was the audience for this?
I think that all the upper class spoke English. You know, English was the world's language.
There are a lot of expats there, too, then.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And remember, this is after the First World War. Mm-hmm. Paris was in its heyday.
Sure.
Tom, you've been looking at the songs because you're going to be singing a fair number of them. Are there any lyrics that really stand out for you that you say, wow, that is Cole Porter. Nobody else could have done that.
I think actually one of the more interesting tunes is one we call Omnibus, which is about a rich guy and three flappers and the guide, the tour guide, and it's quite a piece. It's a long piece, and we just looked at it yesterday. But that one to me really stands out just because it's idiosyncratic. It's true to its time and its place more than some of the other stuff.
Now, Vince has also he's considered one of the main interpreters of the music of the 20s. Did the score for Boardwalk Empire, for Woody Allen's Radio Days. Ken, could you have imagined calling anyone else to work on this project?
No, who else would there be? No, seriously.
Oh, thank
there
you.
Is no one else like that.
And the Nighthawks, too.
Well,
what are some of the challenges for you, Vince, in this?
Well, the challenges is to really interpret this music as close as possible as Fred Waring's band did it back in 1928.
The Waring band was imported into Paris to do this?
Yes, they were considered at that time in the crazy 1920s a jazz orchestra. And the whole appeal of an American band coming over there and giving a little flavor to this newfangled jazz music. And of course the Waring band was very happy to be said, oh, look, we just played Europe and all that stuff. And he brought some singers. He brought Morton Downey. He brought Frances Gershwin, George Gershwin's sister. And on opening night, tell the story, Ken.
On opening night, George was in town writing An American in Paris, so he accompanied his sister in a Gershwin medley that she sang. So we
in the middle of the Cole Porter review.
In the middle of a Cole Porter review. And Cole Porter wrote a little intro for Frances Gershwin to sing before she sang The Man I Love. So we are having that intro and the song The Man I Love, and then we're going to do a Porter medley in the middle of songs of the period that, you know, are a little bit later.
Tom, you sang in Sondheim on Sondheim. Do you feel there's a connection between Porter and Sondheim?
Well, I think that Stephen would say that. There is definitely a similarity in the intelligence of what they do. And just the way that's manifested in the music, that it seems so easy for them to the mixture of music and lyric and the final effect that it has.
Vince, you mentioned the Waring Band was considered a jazz band at the time.
Yes.
How authentic is the jazz of this, and why is it that Cole Porter has been so popular with jazz musicians? So many of his tunes have been recorded by all of the greats.
Yes, Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald and a lot of
Charlie people. Parker.
Charlie, yes. They love to play with those great melodies. And his chord changes were very interesting. They were very jazzable, and some of them are very difficult. I mean, you really had to memorize some of the passages of a Cole Porter song. It wasn't what we called Woolworths, you know, where you go to the bridge and we come in and out. Jazz musicians like a challenge like that.
The Great American Songbook is still popular in some circles. Do you think something is lost in the fact that we don't have any serious contributors to it anymore?
Well, you still have guys. I mean, Bob DeRoe's still around, mm-hmm. and he's written some great songs. We just covered one of his on a Christmas record. And I think, you know, it's hard. That stuff is really hard, and it's also hard to have a platform for it now these days.
Michael Feinstein has been doing mm-hmm. wonderful work at Jazz at Lincoln Center, and he's out there banging the drum.
And Tom Wopat has a new CD and also vinyl disc called I've Got Your Number. Ken, any plans for the show to travel, or is this a once-in-a-lifetime experience?
Well, I don't know. I did email a friend of mine at the Kennedy Center.
We've rented a bus.
Yeah, and I said
an omnibus.
Get down there on the train to the Kennedy Center, but we want to license the show for all across the country.
And you will have an opportunity to see it first here in New York, the Ambassador Review, this Friday at Town Hall. You can go to our show page for ticket information. My great thanks to Ken Bloom, Vince Giordano, and Tom Wopat for being on our show today to talk about it.
Thank you, Leonard. Always a pleasure.
All the best.